You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Tuesday, happy game day. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this show, Tony East, covering the Pacers for Forbes, the West Indianapolis Community News, and the Fieldhouse. And today, we're doing it again, the second season in a row. We're doing something terrible and sad. We're talking about a player who's going to miss a significant amount of time with a knee injury because Jeremy Lamb was announced to basically have destroyed his knee. I couldn't even read off the injuries fast enough to get through that. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about some ripple effects that could have in the short and long term. And then we'll look at his former team, ironically, that the Pacers play tonight, the Charlotte Hornets, in a little game preview action in their first Lambless game. But of course, we'll jump right into the big news of the day, of the week, of the season. Well, I guess not the season, but the remainder of the season. The Pacers will be without Jeremy Lamb. Lamb, according to the Pacers, has a torn ACL, a torn meniscus, and a lateral femoral condylar fracture. I don't know what that last thing is, but it sounds like a knee fracture plus a torn MCL, or excuse me, a torn ACL and a torn meniscus. So that's awful. That's terrible for Lamb. He was having, you know, he was contributing to a good winning team for basically the first time in his career. He was useful with that second unit and finding a groove alongside those guys. He filled in ably for Oladipo. It was really a big year for him to go from these Hornets teams that weren't as good to a little bit better Pacers team and show that, yeah, he can help out that kind of squad. And now the Pacers will be without him for a substantial amount of time. It said in the Pacers release, they said that he'll have surgery at a later date, and he will obviously be out for the rest of the season. So just some quick hitters on this injury. Jeff Stotts of InStreetClothes.com, he is really in tune with sports injury analysis, tracks a bunch of injuries and knows a lot of about all that stuff. First of all, said that meniscus injuries often accompany other severe knee injuries like ACL or MCL1. So this is not uncommon. That was in an article about Zion's meniscus injury, I believe. So this is not an uncommon thing that they're linked. It just sounds really bad because they're both there. But the ACL is the one that will require the longest recovery time. If you'll recall, I think Kristaps Porzingis just went through a really, really long recovery period. But he, in an article from 2014, and I feel like teams are much more cautious with injuries now than they were back in 2014. But still, this is useful information to me. This article is about Dante Exum's torn ACL. It says, the average time of recovery from the date of an ACL tear to the individual's return to professional basketball is roughly 11 months or 327 days, to be more specific. So 327 days from you listening to the show is January 17th, I believe, 2021. So on the average of less conservative times, Lamb would be out till January of next season, although given that this is a pretty substantial injury, it could be longer than that. And of course, teams are a little possibly more conservative now, so there's a chance we could see Lamb not even until the All-Star break next season or even later than that. I mean, it's not really a huge point of rushing him back. So just terrible for Lamb, who, again, was finally in a groove, finally helping a good team win, and will now miss a long freaking time off the basketball court. It's so strange what happened to him this year because really – he had, you know, he played 78 games his sophomore season and then had a few rougher injury years. But finally, really in Charlotte, focused on his body more. When he got there, he was all about, you know, kind of reforming his perception. He worked really with defensive coaches there on getting better on that end and finally became a starter. And when he really focused on his body, he didn't get injured hardly at all. 80 games played his third full season there, and then 79 last year. So to see him go through a ton of injuries this year and have it culminate, I guess the injuries didn't lead to this, so culminate is the wrong word, but have it lead up to this where now he's going to miss so much time. It's just brutal for a guy that has basically improved every year of his career, including this year. So just horrible for him. McMillan, of course, had to talk about it in practice. They basically announced it right before all the press times at Patrick's practice. He said, tough to lose a player for the whole season to an injury like that. He's just said he's sad for Jeremy, of course. And he'll have some tough decisions to make about how to how to get his production from other places on the roster. I'll talk about that in a second. Some other players also, of course, spoke in practice. Malcolm Brogdon said, he's a great teammate. He's a great player. He was just really starting to get his rhythm. He was playing really good ball. So Brogdon, of course, will miss him. He started with him for such a long time, and they actually formed quite a good chemistry. You know, there were quite a few possessions. Brogdon was able to find Lamb coming around to screen, set him up for those mid-range shots. And Nathan Brown of the Indy Star wrote a good article I'd encourage you to all to read about. He provided some quotes about, you know, knowing how he's feeling. He just went through a year-long knee injury rehab, and he said, you know, he knows his head is all over the place. He's got to embrace and trust the process and get back on track. So just devastating news for Jeremy Lamb, and it's absolutely incredible now in retrospect that he was able to stay in the game for a brief moment, hit both of those free throws after the injury, get the Pacers 2 points before he subbed out, and then, you know, he limped into the locker room, and it was announced, you know, whatever, I forget what they said, it was a knee injury, he wouldn't return. So hearing all that, I thought, okay, you know, maybe hearing all that, seeing him hit the free throws, I thought maybe it would be not bad news, but this is horrible news. This is as horrible as it can get for Lamb and terrible for the Pacers, so they're going to have to find a way to survive without him. So we're going to have to look ahead and see what the Pacers can do. So the immediate option, and McMillan already addressed this according to Jay Michael, is that they will turn to Aaron Holiday, which makes a ton of sense. Holiday and the bench units were really good earlier this season. They had a 111 offensive rating with the four of Aaron Holiday, TJ McConnell, Justin Holiday, and Doug McDermott on the floor. So it doesn't really matter. Excuse me, it does matter. But regardless of between Turner, Goga, Sabonis, and I think there were some Leaf minutes in there, which regardless of which center rounded out that group, they've been really good at scoring. You know, they've had really good shooting performances. McConnell's been good at setting guys up, and Holiday's been a good scorer with that group. When he plays with that unit specifically, he's been about 15 points per 36 minutes level scorer. And we've all seen the development he's had as he learns to defer a little bit more and play a little bit more of a two-guard role. So that seems like the obvious first short-term ripple effect is that Aaron Holiday moves back into the rotation where he played behind Lamb early in the season. And I think, and I'm quoting Jared Wade here, who put this idea in my head, and I think this is really well said. We saw how good the second unit, and Sabonis is involved in this. I didn't bring him up with the earlier four lot guys, but that second unit that was tearing teams apart this year really is about equal in effectiveness to the group that had Lamb when Oladipo came back, right? So what the Pacers are losing is less so much so some effectiveness and success level, right? The drop in the what the team will, how good the team will be given their new bench unit with Lamb out isn't substantial, if any at all, but they are losing a ton of versatility, right? They're losing this 6'5 wing who can get his own bucket, right? They don't have the option to throw that guy in with the bench units now if they need to. They don't have the option to stack that guy with Oladipo and Brogdon if they need to. They lose a ton of versatility, and they lose a guy who has skills that are really important in the playoffs. So while it is great that they can fill in and have this great second unit that can keep them afloat, they do really lose a lot in terms of what lineups they're able to go with and what skills they're able to try out on the court. So that's obviously terrible. A big, very common thing that I saw come up on Twitter after his injury was any sort of buyout candidate. Someone mentioned Jamal Crawford. He's not even a buyout guy. He's just a free agent. Jamal Crawford is bad. He's worse than Sumner and Aaron Holiday to me. So I would not go that route, though I understand thinking his size and scoring can be helpful. Lance of Stevenson, of course, has been a popular name discussed, mostly because there was reporting from, I think, Shams Charania, though I don't remember, earlier this week about the former Pacer coming back to basketball, and then this timing, of course, leads to that being the case. I don't know why the Pacers would bury Aaron Holiday and Sumner with Lance, who is, again, like Crawford, worse than both those guys. I understand why fans would want Lance. He's, you know, very entertaining to many people and provides some energy, but I don't really love his fit with McConnell, and I think he's worse than Aaron Holiday. I don't really think that makes a ton of sense, and they'd have to waive a player to sign any of these guys. So to me, for them to a two guard that they would want to get that's on Lamb's level, they would have to have a guy that's actually like close to that level to do it and not currently a free agent and not on a team. You know, I think the best free agent shooting guard who's not on the roster right now is J.R. Smith. They're not a ton of them that are just floating around out there to just snag up. And they're definitely not going to – that's not fair to say because I don't know. I doubt they would waive someone to replace him knowing that Aaron Holiday can ably step up and they can get minutes to one of their younger guys. So I don't expect to see them make an external move. It's certainly more possible now. I was pretty low on the likelihood that they did a buyout anything, but now I think it's more possible, although I still find it to be extremely unlikely. I think they just roll with Aaron and then have Edmund Sumner slide into the role he was in before, where he was the break glass in case of emergency guard. You know, he had that stretch at the end of December when Lamb, I forget what injury he had. Maybe it was a concussion, and then Brogdon had the concussion, and Lamb had a groin injury about the same time. Edmund Sumner had to fill in, and he played pretty well. You know, he played well in Miami. He played well in some wins at home. So he's good in that role when he's able to play, but he's currently out with a hip injury, so we might see some Naz Mitrulong sneaking into the back temporarily. But I think they're going to go with internal promotions to fill this space. I think that makes the most sense just because of how good their bench was prior to Lamb going down early in the season, and just because this really gives them the perfect time to push Holiday's development, and they can still see how good their starting five is, no problem. But they can also fit Aaron in with more guys and see how that could impact their future. So that's I think in the short term, we're just going to see a lot more Aaron. Now, some long-term stuff that I want to address that I saw. One is stuff people said, and one is just stuff I want to talk about. Some people talked about, oh, now they can't trade him because of this injury. Well, yes, they can. Porzingis got traded with a massive injury last year. So what can happen is teams can waive a physical of a player in a trade. They can just say, nah, we don't care. We just want to get this deal done. So even if Lamb's just in a deal for salary, no problem, he can still be traded. Now, the team receiving Lamb and whatever else from the Pacers can say, well, we need more assets to take on this completely dead money for Lamb, who's out for a while. That stinks and does hurt his trade value, certainly. But if he's going to be used as salary balanced in a trade, there's still no problem. That can still happen. Now, I think another thing we might see is in the summer, they're going to have an interesting decision to make, the Pacers, on if they want to sign a shooting guard to fill in. You know, Lamb is obviously a long-term backup option with Depot, but they have Justin Holiday here too. Is like this, you know, Depot's out for a little. We need someone to fill in the rotation. Well, next year, maybe they'll have to snag someone on a one-year deal to fill in and play while Lamb's out, especially if they know he's going to be out for the whole year. That makes a lot more sense. And maybe they think Sumner can do that, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them use some resources on another depth guard next year. And if they can keep Justin Holiday, that's not as big of a deal. But now there's more pressure to keep Justin Holiday if they really need someone to contribute in those minutes. So there are quite a few ripple effects here that I think are going to be very interesting in the summertime. And I think a lot of them can be more clear if they do know the timetable earlier, right? What I gathered from reading all of Jeff's stuff on In Street Clothes is that a lot of these injuries, they don't really know until the severity is hard to gauge pre-surgery. I think they can know more at a later date. So we'll have to see. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of changes. And I don't expect it, but don't be surprised necessarily if a buyout guy or a free agent two guard comes in, but they'd have to cut someone to do it. Alize Johnson, clearly the most likely guy. So we'll see, and then in the summer, we'll have those discussions when the time comes. But just the big takeaway is just horrible news for Lamb, right? He was finally contributing on a winning team, even if his role was reduced from prior seasons. He's down a few minutes, and he's on the bench. It still is huge for him and all these guys who have played. You know, he played on good OKC teams, but he didn't play at all. And then coming to the Hornets, he was playing a lot, but they weren't as good. So finally, this was it. This was the team that he was good and contributing on. Like, okay, when he was 21, he played on an OKC team in the playoffs, played under 10 minutes per game. And then with the Hornets 3 years later, he played 4 minutes per game. So again, this is easily his biggest role on a big, good team. And it's taken away from him because of an injury on a tough foul. Just awful for him. Hopefully he can come back and recover and be just as good as he was pre-injury. I mean, we're seeing with Vic that it takes a lot of time for guys to get back up to the level that they are pre-injury and even fit in with the team. And maybe that's another reason we might see the Pacers be conservative next year, but you never know. So total bummer for Lamb. It's just horrible news. I wish him the best in his recovery. And maybe we'll hear from him soon about where he's at and when his surgery is. So in the meantime, the Pacers still have to put together a team and play games, and they're going to do that tomorrow against the Hornets. So let's talk a little bit about that one game. So this Hornets game could be big time weird game. Currently, Edmund Sumner's questionable with that hip injury that's kept him out the two games since the All-Star break. Oladipo is questionable with the back injury that's held him out since that Knicks game. And obviously Lamb, big long-term injury here. If all three of those guys are out, I think Brogdon and Aaron Holiday will start, and then TJ McConnell and probably Naz Mitrulong will have to to shore up the bench guard rotation. And I don't know how well Naz can play off ball. That's going to be hard and interesting to see how he can fill in there. Maybe they just try to get him like 5 or 10 minutes and then let McConnell just play more than usual, or have Justin Holiday slide down and they play Goga or something. I don't know, but they're going to have, they might have to have quite an interesting guard rotation in this game if a bunch of guys are unable to go, which is a huge bummer. This is a horrible time for that. They need to get back on track. They've been playing pretty poorly in general. They played not great in that Knicks game, even though they were able to get a win. And then obviously they just got totally destroyed by the Raptors. So this, the Hornets not being good and losing a bunch. They have just 3 wins in February. They have just 4 wins since January 5th. This is a good time for the Pacers to get back on track, get another win, and go, hey, look, we're 2-1 since the All-Star break. So the more of those guards that can play, the better. Now, the Hornets are not very good. Like I just said, they haven't won in a million trillion years. And some of that is just they have young guards playing a lot, right? Terry Rozier, 2.5 turnovers per game, not shooting particularly well from the field, 42%. Devontae Graham, electric three-point shooter, also a high turnover guy, three per game, shooting 37% from the field, although he is shooting very well from three. So he's just an atrocious scorer from inside the arc. So those guys do a lot of good things and do a lot of damage to the Hornets at the same time. So I think if the Pacers are able to just let, even if those guys do have decent nights or match their averages, if the Pacers can just limit the Hornets from doing the one thing they do well, especially against the Pacers, they'll win, and that is on the glass. The Hornets' defensive rebounding is really bad. They're actually 29th in the league and defensive rebounds per game. Some of that's just that their defense stinks and they give up a lot of makes. Some of that is that they aren't awesome on that end. But they are awesome at offensive rebounding. And again, some of that is because they miss a lot of shots on offense. But some of that is because Cody Zeller and Bismack Biyombo are really good at getting interior position and grabbing those offensive rebounds. And we saw that. That's why, it's a big part of why the Hornets came back to win in Charlotte. The first time these guys matched up, that was a really a horrible fourth quarter for the Pacers. And as Biyombo especially was fantastic in that game. And then in Indy, I think it was mid-December, the Pacers won that game by 22 points. Biyombo had 8 offensive rebounds in that game. Zeller had 6. They started all next to each other, and they were still able to destroy the Pacers. It's really insane that the Hornets had 17 offensive rebounds and still lost by 22. They shot horrible that game, 31%. Extremely unlikely they shoot that poorly again. However, it's also extremely unlikely they get 14 offensive rebounds from 2 different guys. But the Pacers really, I mean, they've been a bad, bad, bad rebounding team for quite some time now. They really need to focus on keeping those two guys away from the rim. It's going to behoove them substantially. The Hornets are not a good shot-making team. It's not that necessarily they don't have good shooters or scorers. It's not necessarily they don't run great sets or anything. It's that they don't have the best shooters or scorers outside of Graham. They're really limited on how many guys can play finish for them. Their second best shooter might have been Marvin Williams. They bought him out. So anything they can do that's creative, they can't get a good shot out of it. That's why they rely so often on Devontae Graham pull-up three. So it could be a game where Devontae Graham is just on his shit and hitting all these pull-up threes, and there's just nothing the Pacers can do. That's going to be tough. That's going to probably be a close game. But if they can really contain the offensive glass and you know, Rozier and Graham hit about the normal number of shots they take, they both take a ton of shots per game, and the Pacers can rebound those misses, they should be okay. And I have a feeling they're going to come out with a sense of urgency after just getting destroyed. I mean, if they don't, that will reflect very poorly on them. So after getting destroyed, I have a feeling we're going to see the Pacers at a little bit better of a level, of course, than we've seen recently. So I think they can win this game. I think they're definitely capable talent-wise of winning this game, right? The Hornets bench, I haven't even mentioned a lot of the guys that are in their second unit, mostly because a lot of them are young, but also because you don't think of these guys as impact guys. But for example, in their last game, they took on the Brooklyn Nets, and their 3 highest minute guys off the bench were Malik Monk, Jalen McDaniels, and Cody Martin. I bet most of you listeners haven't even heard of 2 of those guys. And then they also played a guy, Caleb Martin, Bismack Biyombo, and Joe Chile, who's on a 10-day contract, or their other 3 bench guys. So yeah, they don't exactly have the best second unit in basketball. So this could be one where the Pacers, if they're just able to have a sense of urgency, play the game they want, do what they did against the Knicks for probably about 30 to 35 minutes. They should be able to win this game now. They are, as you know, Adam was pessimistic yesterday on their chances, and he's right to think that way. They're playing pretty terrible basketball right now, and I understand the thought that maybe they can't keep it up, but the Hornets defense is not very good. They play pretty slow, which the Pacers play slow too. That should cater enough to them. If they can just get a few, again, stops, rebounds, get some transition buckets, they should be able to bury this lowly Hornets team. So this is a good time for the Pacers to play a bad team after that Raptors game, and a good time really to try to work through the shock of a big injury. So we'll see how it goes. I think the Pacers win this one. I was really close with my Knicks score. I appreciate all of you who remembered how close I was and pointed out on Twitter. I'm predicting 110 to 101 Pacers in this one, but I think it's not going to end up being as close as that score. I don't know why I'm so bullish on their chances in this one, but we'll see. But the big thing to monitor going forward is just how do they bend with Lamb gone for so long? What is their strategy? What is their mitigation plan? We'll have to see. Of course, we'll talk about it throughout the week and especially next week as we can break down three games with Adam. So, of course, stick around for all the episodes of Locked On Pacers. We'll have more tomorrow. Adam will be here to break down this game. Thank you guys so much for listening. And, of course, we'll see you tomorrow.